Out! Out of this property!
Unbelievable, sick, evil people!
No criminals to catch today, hey?
Just did.
Just a pastor.
Where are the criminals?
Yeah? You call that crime? For opening church?
Breaching public health orders.
Yeah, this is sick.
Well,
you get orders from corrupted politicians, corrupted leaders, and this is what you do.
I am convicted terrorist, believe it or not.
This is Zerkadowski here of WeAreChange.org at Trump Doral with the one and only author Pavlovsky, who clearly is an individual that knows how to stand up to tyranny, knows how to stand up to individuals within the government that tried to shut his church down, that was met by his loud voice saying, "Demons be gone." And Arthur is a true inspiration to a lot of individuals. We're also Polish. And listening to his story, I remembered thinking about my own personal journeys in independent journalism. The things you were describing were some of the things that I personally went through as well. So it definitely resonated with me. But there's a lot of important learning lessons that we're going to be getting into in this particular story, because your energy, your story, I believe needs to be shared as widely as possible. Because in the early days of the sickness, the government went door to door, business to business, church to church, and said, you know what? Only our friends are allowed to be open. Churches are not allowed. You stood up to them. How did that story end up for you? Because you went through a lot of craziness afterwards. Tell us in short, did people try to burn down your house, your church? Tell us what happened after you made that initial stand for yourself, for your church, for your people.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you, it was easier to stand against the Gestapo and another than this weather. It's hot for me. We are living in our little Siberia, as I call it, Calgary, Alberta. We have minus 30, minus 40. I got no problem with that. Through the years, you get used to it. But every time I come visit your beautiful country here, I mean, the weather cracks me and it's like hot. And I'm, my God, how I'm going to survive this? Bring me the it will be a lot easier. At least I would be able to say, get out. What do you do with the weather? You can't say get out.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it's a beautiful place. Like, my God, you are blessed.
Absolutely.
People, you are blessed in this country. And if you want to keep that blessing, you must, and there is no option, you must rise up and stand up. Listen, I always say to the people, you don't want to believe Pastor Art Pawlowski, fine, don't believe me. Believe my accent. I know what I'm talking about. I grew up in hell. I grew up behind the Iron Curtain under the boots of the Soviets with the biggest craziness in the 20th century. The fascism, the Nazis, of course, and then the communism and socialism. I grew up in a little city called Knurów. And believe it or not, there was a border before the Second War, and we still had the concentration camp leftovers, the bunkers of the SS. And as a little kid, I remember we were playing in the bunkers of the Nazis and learning the stories of what those people did. Because you got to remember, it's not the idea that does this to people. It's humans that do this to other humans using ideas. And for whatever reason, through history, from time to time, there are some that emerge out of nothing, thinking they're better than the rest of us. Just like we see right now, those globalists that are telling you, you will own nothing and you will be happy. Listen, I grew up in a country, we did not own anything and we were not happy. Believe me, who are you going to believe? A guy that, you know, flies private jets to Davos, driving SUVs, eating the most expensive Japanese steaks, or a Polish immigrant that actually grew up in a place that we owned nothing and we were not happy. So the story is very simple. When you see evil, if you're a good man, if you are a good man or a woman, you must oppose the evil. And there are all kinds of ways to oppose evil. You see, I chose the peaceful way. I chose to use my words. And I did it deliberately. I started to call them Nazis and Gestapo. What is Gestapo? You know, people don't even know what that means. It simply means political police. During the era, they were police officers that were willing to do only what the political party leaders were telling them to do, not to stand, to uphold the law, to bring accountability, checks and balances. And no, they were political operatives, gangsters in uniform. That's how I call them, gangsters, mafia muscle, if you will, because now there is very little difference between the government officials and the mafia bosses. They act exactly the same thing. It's lawlessness, bribery, coercion, blackmail. So what I did as a pastor, well, first of all, I want you to know, and I know this will be strange to you. I bet it will be strange for you, but I read the Bible. Most of the pastors don't read the Bible. Most of the Christians don't read the Bible. I read the Bible many times. And here is a fascinating part of the Bible, is that from the very beginning to the very end is a highly political book. I mean, my God, we talk about king. Imagine that. We talk about kingdom. If there is a king and there is a kingdom, there must be soldiers and ambassadors of Christ. And actually, that's what the Bible calls us. We are politicians for the kingdom of God. We are his ambassadors. And we also are shepherds. As a pastors, our job is to defend those that God has given us under our umbrella. And that's what I did. You know, it's quite a fascinating thing, because at the very beginning, I didn't know why people got so excited about my few words, get out. Like, I've done amazing things, I think, for the kingdom of God. I did big, you know, festivals and marches for Jesus. I fed millions of people, started churches, orphanages in Kenya and other places. And yet the world got excited because I told the hyenas, get out. And I talked to a friend of mine. He was a politician for all his life. And I said, please tell me, what am I missing? I don't like the video. I watched the video after, and I said, like, I don't like this guy yelling. But here's what he said. He said, what you articulated with those few words was on people's hearts for a year. They're sick and tired of this abuse of power. They want those villains to just leave them alone, leave our children alone, get out of our schools, get out of our hospitals. You villains, you hyenas, you wolves, whatever you want to call them, you globalist psychopaths, you bloody murderers, get out of my parliament, get out of my city hall, get out of my house, White House. Just leave us alone. Let us be what God wanted us to be. And that resonated with them. And because you're a Polish immigrant with your accent and those few words, they grab that idea of hope that there is a man that is willing to say what we have on our minds and our hearts. And the rest is the story, is history, right? Because as you know, they came back. They came back with a vengeance, political vengeance. They used everything they had at their disposal. Prime Minister, Premier, Minister of Justice, Police, RCMP, which is like your FBI, health inspectors, you name it. They threw at me corrupted judges. Adam Germain, corrupted judge that sentenced me to prison, and also gave us and my brother David a compelled speech, which has never been done in the history of my country, that a judge is telling me what I have to say. Can you imagine? That's done in China, that's done in North Korea, you know, behind the Iron Curtain during the Soviet era. Also, David Gates, I don't know if he's related to your devil here, Bill Gates, but David Gates of Alberta, gave them the power to enter our church with whomever they want to and anytime they want to. So they showed up with SWAT team, anti-terrorists in the church. Can you believe it? And then, of course, John Rook, that gave them the power to enslave all Albertans. And then the latest one, Gordon Krinke, a corrupted judge of Alberta, that sentenced me as the first Canadian ever in the history of my country. I was found guilty on inciting mischief and eco-terrorism. I am convicted terrorist, believe it or not, for my sermon to a hurting Canadians, to the truckers doing the biggest civil rights movement in the history of Canada, the freedom movement, the truck movement. I gave a 90-minute speech. What did I say? I said to the people, stand for God and state-given rights. I told them to do it peacefully, no guns, no swords, do it solidarity style. Why solidarity style? Because I lived through that time. It was in the 80s and I saw it with my own eyes, the power of the united masses of people. And I said, this is my message to the people. Give me enough Albertans and I will bring you liberty. and prosperity. Give me enough Canadians and I will give you liberty. You see, we hold the power. And maybe this is a shocker to you, or to you, but there is more of us than them.
That's absolutely true. And what you described, especially in the beginning, because my family also played a role in the Solidarity movement, the Solidarność movement in Gdańsk in northern Poland. And I remember, you know, talking to my family, talking to my loved ones, talking to my grandmother specifically, detailing the stories of when the Germans came in, and then when the Russians, the Soviets came in, and what they did to the local population. People here in the United States have it very well. People don't understand how bad it gets just by people following orders and just doing what they're told. I still have the papers that my grandma had that you had to buy monka, that you had to buy cukier, sugar, and your basic household goods, everything. There wasn't any kind of cash. It was all based on government coupons that they would give you, that you were allowed to buy certain items, which was crazy. You got like one pair of shoes a year, which was also crazy.
Yeah, but imagine the idea, right? Because we need to elaborate on this a little bit. An idea where the government tells you how many kilos of meat you can buy,
yep,
and what kind of meat you can have, and how much sugar you can have. Now, just grasp that idea that some crazy bureaucrat is telling you and your children what you can and cannot have if it comes to food. You know, like think about that. Canadians, Americans, Australians, Westerners have no idea what we're talking about. How you explain to an American that you have to stand in a lineup for 3 days to buy 1 kilo of coffee? How you explain that?
Yeah.
Like, what you're talking about? You go to your store, you got Costco here, right? And you've got 100 different coffees to choose from. I mean, my biggest problem when I came was it was too much. It kind of was freaking us out because, you know, in my country, once a year, I was allowed to have a chocolate because you couldn't buy. And at the time, once a year, when my mom, by a miracle of God, was able to buy us a chocolate, me and my brother, with peanuts in it, I would break those little bars and I would leak the peanut around and save the peanut for the next day. How you explain that to an American? Yep. Their kids playing here. How you explain that to them when their parents can take them to their store and they can choose 100 chocolates?
Yep.
And they can even afford 100. Yep. How you say that? Pair of jeans. You don't have jeans here. But, you know, pair of jeans. I remember...
She's wearing a pair of jeans.
Pair of jeans cost $30, if I remember correctly, and that was 1 month's salary. 1 month, you had to work like crazy all day long for a month to buy one pair of Levi's or whatever jeans, right? Just think about that.
Yep.
Today, you go to a store and you can afford like 10 a day if you want to, but now one a month, and you couldn't buy it because they were not selling it. You had to bribe, you had to smuggle things from another countries. So we just walked over there and there are banana trees. And I adore your country. And you know, I hope I could stay here a little bit longer so I would not be sweating and my body would adjust.
You get used to it and then it feels great. I love it here.
But there are banana trees. You know, I'll never forget my brother David, my younger brother, 5 years younger than me. My mom, somewhere by a miracle of God, was able to buy 2 bananas and gave one to me and one to my brother David, and he disappeared. We lost our brother David and we didn't know where and what happened to him. So we looked all over and we found him behind the door, hiding and scraping the covering of the banana, how you call it, the peel.
Yeah.
He was scraping it. So he ate the banana, but he was like a monkey, you know? He was so happy. He wanted more, but there was no more, so he was scraping the leftovers. Like, how you explain that to the kids here? You had too good for too long, and it's biting you now, because when you have too good for too long, you become apathetic, uninterested, and you just simply don't want to engage, you don't want to lose. That's how they get you.
Exactly. And people need to understand what you've been through, what my family's been through, what I've been through in just a little bit, because I was still a child growing up in it, so I didn't really realize it as much as my family did, is that What happened over there is that's exactly what's going to happen here in the United States, and we are on the inroads, and I think this is why I am who I am. This is why I'm as active as I am, as vocal as I am, and I think this is why you are too. Correct me if I'm wrong, because everything that my family went through in Poland, it's slowly encroaching. It's slowly happening here in the Western world. It's happening faster in Canada than it is in America, but it's also happening here in America. And to me, this is a kind of make it or break it moment, because a country that had it so good for so long is dealing with so much government now that's literally reintroducing. And it's the same thing throughout communistic nations, throughout all these same philosophies, these same ideas. It's all about taking everything away, the state controlling everything, and then you're lucky if you get anything in response to that because of the larger greediness of humanity. Do you see it that same way? And how do you see the future of Canada and the United States? Because looking at the forecast, it's a lot nastier than the humidity here.
You're absolutely right. I would say that communism, socialism, fascism, Marxism, whatever the hybrid we see right now, is already here. The enemy is not approaching. The enemy is not at the gate. The enemy is within. You're dealing, I'm dealing in Canada as well, with traitors. If you would elect me a king, let's just pretend the miracle happens and you elect me a king, I would charge them with treason. Those people committed acts of treason against their own people that they swore to protect and work for. The idea of I'm your servant, they've lost it. They're only serving their own greedy bellies. You know, some people say, well, people should not have beautiful things and enjoy beautiful, you know, scenery like this. I disagree, because God is a perfect God and He has given us beauty to enjoy. This is God's beauty in a form of a golf club that a man made. Why not enjoy the beauty? And the only way you can enjoy that is when you work as a society together. Because every country I traveled to, and I traveled to many countries, you will have a private clubs, and outside of those private clubs there were people starving and people, kids are running barefoot. But I'm telling you, it's hell even for the rich. I saw them terrified. I saw them protecting their wealth with machine guns and security. That's not alive. That's a golden cage. While we still have an opportunity to push this evil around, away from our society, we should do it. Because even if you think right now that you're somehow protected, you got the job, or maybe you got a few millions in your bank account, and you say, well, this will not affect me. It will. Even watching people starving, even watching people suffering, committing suicides, losing jobs, everyone suffers. Everyone suffers. In the end of the day, you know what the revelation I had? When I studied, I teach history and I teach theology. And one of the fascinating things that I came to realize is that in the end of the day, the villains and the victims are always victims in the end. You think today you're the macho guy, you got the gun and you got the protection of the government. But you know what? In the end of the day, totalitarian regimes turn on each other. Stalinism, if you know history, he wiped out all of his friends that helped him to be who he was. Hitler did the same thing. He murdered, you know, people around him. That's what you deal with. Every empire ends the same way. Corruption creeps in, moral standards destroyed, fiat currency or whatever currency they had diluted, and a collapse of that empire. So I believe we still have an opportunity to push this evil away. How you do it? Well, you got to be vocal, you got to be courageous, you got to be willing to pay the price. You have to be willing to say simply no, or like I did, get out.
Yeah.
Who do you think you are, you uncircumcised Philistines, as I quite often say, that you should defy the armies of the living God? Like, you're mocking God. Well, you can mock Him only for a season, and it will bite you. We can turn this around. We have to unite. And please, do not divide yourself. They are very good at dividing us. It's a never-ending notion of divide and conquer. When you see the enemy saying divide, turn on each other, you do the opposite. You do the opposite. When he tells you a certain group of people is evil, you embrace the certain group of people and you change them.
Yeah.
Only love can change. Only love can do that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And it's something that I've been telling my audience for over 18 years, the agenda could only work if we're fighting each other and not against the larger fight between good and evil. And there's real evil out there, as you were describing in your speech, something that I personally experienced too, and that's a lot of officers, a lot of people in authority overtaken, and you can kind of see it in their eyes. It's very hard to describe sometimes, because it does feel like it's another kind of energetic force. It's not even human sometimes, especially when they try to cause you fear and inflict pain, and then they put you in places like solitary confinement, or they try to restrain you, or they try to baton you. I've been through all of that. I've been handcuffed and beat by police officers.
And it doesn't make any sense,
yeah,
right?
It doesn't, and it's like, why? I'm here as a journalist. I'm literally in jail for asking a question. Like, why am I treated like I'm a terrorist? You were treated like a terrorist. You had, they tried to burn down your church. They tried to burn down your house.
12 nights they came and they tried to burn us alive, and my three little children, you know, young children. Like, think about it. You know, they're still young to me. Like, my oldest is 23, but to me, he's still a baby. He would disagree probably, passionately. But, you know, they're all in bed. It was 12 at night, and suddenly this commotion, firefighters, police. I thought I'm being arrested. I came out, and boom, our house is on fire. They tried to burn our church. They unscrewed tires in our pickup truck. I was physically attacked. I was imprisoned, arrested, in and out. My record is, like I said, 347 citations, 120 court cases, 16 arrests, and many times detained. Like, excuse me, for what? What have I done? I'm not a violent man. Not once I was charged with assault or any violence. Every arrest and everything they did to me, every ticket was related to me either feeding the people, I feed thousands of people every week, or me preaching. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why they did this to you, why they're doing this to me and to Donald Trump and others, because they're afraid of the truth. When you're a pathological liar, when you're a murderer, when you are an evil psychopath like we're dealing with now, think about it, what you would be afraid of? Those that preach the truth, those that speak the truth. Why? Because everything goes back. You see, we did a very big circle going back to the same place, the Word of God. God is the truth. And He says, the truth shall set the captives free. It's all about the truth. If I was a liar, I would probably be president. If I was supplying people with ice cream, I would probably be in the White House with Biden, because he loves ice cream, right? If I was a bloody murderer, I would probably receive the greatest honor in Canada, the Order of Canada. And I'm not joking, they gave an Order of Canada to the biggest mass murderer in the history of Canada, Morgenthaler. He created the abortion clinics in Canada, and he got the Order of Canada, the highest honor that a man can receive. They're evil. We're dealing with demon-possessed evil entities, and they hate us just because, like someone said, our spirit irritates their demons.
Yeah.
And they can't help it.
Yeah.
Some of those people, I would consider myself a normal guy, even funny sometimes, I would say. And yet the level of hatred we receive from them for nothing, for simply being ourselves.
Yeah.
And we should all be free in a free and democratic society, but they don't want that. When they tell you we are for tolerance, that means they're the most intolerant people ever. Those that were yelling at me, my body, my choice, were trying to force us with the job. Nothing makes sense. It's like my wife always says, well, you try to find a reason with devil. There's no reasoning with him. He's a pathological liar. And he knows he's a liar. And he's doing this purposely. So there's no point of reasoning with him, because he knows what he's doing.
Yep.
The only way to defeat them is by keep preaching the truth, setting the captives free, and bringing more and more on our side until finally something breaks and we get our freedom back. Here is what I predict. And you will not like that. I predict that people in the Western Hemisphere will have to suffer a little bit more. I believe it's still too good for many. And if it's good for them, they don't want to risk what they have. Therefore, they're going to lose even more. And until that happens, I don't think many will rise up. So we must be patient. When they push a little bit more, and the people will be suffering a little bit more. I believe we're going to see the greatest awakening, the greatest harvest, the greatest revival, whatever you want to call it, the greatest uprising in the human history. Why am I saying this? Because what they've done to us was global. The fear, the terrorizing was globally done. You see, when I was growing up in Poland, we had hope in America, Canada, England, France, right? Because we were behind the Iron Curtain. Now the whole globe is behind the Iron Curtain. There is no rescuing. Like, we are in this together. So together we can get out of that. Yep. And we must, yep. Or our children. You know, look at those children. They are completely oblivious to what's happening globally. You know, they got their parents, they pay their bills, they feed them, right? Life is good. They have no idea. Chocolates are still in the stores. But let's keep it that way. And it's our responsibility. I got three children. My children are worth fighting for. I don't want them to experience what I had to experience. But you know what? Your children are worth fighting for as well. I was offered to stay in the United States of America before I was arrested. I knew I'm going to be arrested. And here is what I said in Colorado Springs, my last address to the American people. Canadian children are also worth fighting for. We must do our part wherever God places us. And he placed me in Canada, in a town that most of the people have never heard of, Calgary, Alberta. That's my home. That's where my house is. That's where the ministry has been given to me. And if everyone did that, imagine wherever God places you, if you did your part, this whole thing would be over already. But people are not suffering enough yet. When that happens, I believe we're going to see the greatest revival this earth has ever seen.
Yep. And we definitely need more people encouraged to just speak out peacefully, nonviolently, just to be able to speak the truth. And I think this is a real war between truth and lies. And if you look at what we're going up against, I do believe it is kind of a death cult that has been hijacked, that is summoning demons literally and figuratively. Because if you look at their MO and what they've been doing, it's always the same thing. It's always the same thing under Stalin, the same thing under Mao, the same thing under Pol Pot, the same thing under Castro. And the left always eats their own. And they always implement communism. They always say, we're going to help everyone. We're going to give everyone everything. And then in reality, you're left with nothing and you're screwed over with no liberty, no job, no prosperity, no financial freedom, nothing. So this is the larger fight. The fight is evil. My last question to you, what motivates you? What gives you the energy? What would you tell the person out there who's afraid? What gives you the power to fight these demons? What motivates you?
Well, number of things. The number one would be God. And I will be honest with you, if it was not for God, I would not be doing this. I would be just too terrified, too scared. They tried to murder me so many times, I would just not be able to function anymore. I'll probably be depressed, hiding somewhere and throwing a towel and saying, forgive me, I will never say a word again. So God is the number one thing, because God gives me hope. God gives me an ability to see that we have already won, the enemy just doesn't know it yet. And number two is family. I'm doing this for them. I'm doing this for my children. I want them to be able to live in a free country, in a beautiful country, because God has given us a beautiful country. It's the people that are destroying it. So we must remove those that don't care about what's beautiful and good, remove them and implement people that actually care for us. And the number three is other people as well. God created us all for a purpose, and we read in the Bible very clearly that he wants us to defend the cause of the widows, the voiceless, those that cannot defend themselves, the children. We must stand in the gap for them. Who is going to do it? If you will not do it, if I will not do it, if no one will do it, they're going to perish, they're going to die. My job as a man of God, put it this way, my job as a man is to stand for what's good. My job as a Christian is to do it even more, with an understanding that the reward will come sometimes not necessarily from people, but from God himself. And in the end of the day, I want to be able to look in a mirror or into the faces of my children and say, I did what I could as a man, as a father, as a clergyman. Maybe it was not enough. Maybe it was not good enough. Maybe I could push it harder, but I did my best. Take it or leave it. And I hope that others will do the same. And in the end of the day, I think that's what God requires us to do, just to stand up. It keeps coming to me all the time, the verse from the Bible that a prophet said, here I am, when God was looking for anyone, for a man that he can use, who will stand against the workers of iniquity, against the evildoers. And this one guy, we don't know if he was somebody or a nobody. Now we know him. But at that time, I'm sure he was a nobody. He says, here I am, Lord, use me. And that's what I said to God at the very beginning. I probably would not use Arthur Pulaski if I was God. I probably would find someone smarter, better looking, with more hair, and probably definitely with a better English, no accent. But I said to God, if you want to use me, then here I am. If I'm good enough for you, if you walked around the earth and you couldn't find anybody else, my God, we are in trouble. But here I am, Lord, use me. And that's how it started. And it started 20, 30 years ago with a simple yes to God. And I hope you say the same thing. Just say yes to whatever the destiny he has for you. And I'm telling you, it's going to be an adventurous journey. Sometimes it will be up and down like a roller coaster. But you know what? When I was younger, I loved roller coaster. It looks like God says, okay, you can have it as your whole life. This adventurous, amazing roller coaster, fast forward, but good, yeah. Exciting.
Yeah, this life definitely isn't boring, especially when you commit your mission towards not only trying to be the best version of yourself, but to leave this earth better than what you had it and what you got it in the first place. And to me, you know, at the end of your life, how do you want to live your life? Do you want to have regrets? Do you want to just feel bad about not doing enough? Or do you want to live a life that you know you actually did everything in your power to try to make it as best as you can for the future of this entire world? So I thank you for that motivation. I thank you for standing up. I thank you for your courage and encouraging everyone else. Where can people find you? Where can people support you? Where's the place people could go to check out more about you?
Well, I have become a leader of a political party, believe it or not, because I looked around for anyone, and again, I couldn't find anyone, so we started a political party. Do not shy from politics. When you see a dark place, be the light in that dark place. Whatever it is, education system, healthcare system, justice system, whatever the system we have, all the seven mountains of influence, entertainment, but if you want to support us, go to streetchurch.ca. Street, because we feed thousands of people on the streets of Calgary. Streetchurch.ca, and you will be able to be part of what we're doing, and you will be able to help us. I want to end with this. Good people do not bow before the evil people. Lions do not bow before the hyenas. We eat them for breakfast. We don't make deals with them. We don't debate with them. We just show up and we clean the place. And if every good person did just that, millions of people around the world would not die. So be that person. Rise up. Either you're a man or a woman, young or old, qualified or not so much, educated or not. It doesn't matter. In the hands of God, God is looking for someone. Be that someone. Be blessed.
Author, that was Zaibishtya. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you so much for your energy. Thank you so much for your message here. I hope you guys appreciated it. If you did, share this video with your friends and family members. It's one of the few ways that these videos get out there to the general public, and it's because of you. That's why I love you guys. Stay tuned for more here on wearechange.org.